Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at openhousecommunity.com.au.
You would, I hope, know that here on Open House, we don't shrink from sometimes dealing with really difficult, challenging questions. We do it out of a strong desire to help us understand our world and our faith at a deeper level, and to help those who need it. And so tonight, to what some I quite understand might find a confronting conversation, but it's about one of the great challenges and constantly escalating problems of our world, that is, internet pornography. It's claimed 2 out of every 3 Australian men view pornography. 1 in 3 10-year-old children have been exposed to internet pornography. The addiction to it all is out of control. The industry is breathtaking in its size, estimated to be earning $100 billion a year. I'd say many more of us, probably more than we care to admit, need help with this. Jason Huxley did for a long time. His is a deeply cautionary tale. It's ended well with him setting up the Guilty Pleasure Organisation to both aid in understanding and help the huge number of people who struggle with this so secretly, so worryingly. It's ended well, but it's been quite a journey up until now. Jason, welcome to Open House.
Hi.
It's great to have you with us. This started for you as a teenager.
Yeah, that's right. You know, pornography for me was something that, you know, I didn't really kind of think was, didn't really think about it much, I suppose. And I just started with a little bit of innocent viewing, you know, looking at some celebrities and stuff, and then it kind of progressed from there. And, you know, that was in the old dial-up days, so you really couldn't get too carried away with your viewing, but it certainly, I let it become, you know, a reasonably major problem.
Why do you think it became so much of a problem for you, but not perhaps others?
Yeah, well, look, it's obviously, you know, we're all kind of wired that way, you know, that's how God's kind of created us, but, you know, to enjoy looking at women, you know, that's what men do. But I mean, that's meant to be focused on our partner. So I suppose it was, you know, normal growing male curiosity. You know, I was probably full of testosterone, and off we kind of went. So yeah, that's probably the reason why, you know.
But again, that's not a universal thing. Not everyone becomes so addicted to pornography.
Well, look, it's, you know, it's a decision that I made. You know, I sat there in front of the computer and made the decision to look. So, you know, ultimately, yes, it was, you know, a decision that I'd made. I mean, certainly from my point of view now, I don't think any kind of viewing's really healthy at all. But, you know, my progression to being hooked on the stuff was all based on decisions, you know, viewing decisions that I made.
How long did it take for you to get hooked, and what did that addiction mean day to day?
Yeah, so, I mean, it, you know, as we said before, it started when I was a teenager, and I started dating my wife, and I kind of fessed up to her, and I said, hey, you know, I'm looking at the stuff, and she was, you know, pretty hurt about that. But we kind of thought we weren't doing sex before marriage, we were engaged, and we thought, you know, once we enter into marriage, it's going to be untapped supply of sex and, you know, all of those thoughts. And so it won't be a problem then. And, you know, within 6 months of being married, I was back looking again, which is terrible. It's something I wish I never did, but I did. And I just kind of let it progress from there. So, you know, I was lying, deceiving. I was always hiding what I was doing. I was masking everything that I was doing. And I, you know, that just progressed until we got ADSL. And then it became almost an untapped supply, you know, switching from, you know, the old dial-up connection to ADSL. You couldn't really get busted on ADSL, and you could just go forever. And I just let it progress and progress and progress to the point where I found I was spending, you know, too many hours a day looking at the stuff. And I actually started realizing that I was losing massive amounts of productivity. Things weren't getting done. I was angry. I was irritable. You know, I just wasn't the guy that you wanted to be around.
How many hours a day?
Well, look, it probably progressed to, you know, sometimes I'd have really long sessions, you know, probably up to 6 hours, which sounds, you know, absolutely terrible. And I've kind of since learned some of the reasons why I was behaving that way. But like I said before, they were decisions that I made.
When you confessed it to your fiancé, was that a hard thing for her to get over or through?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I basically did 2 confessions. I mean, I did a confession to her before we got married, and then I started viewing again, and then I let our marriage progress to the point where we were pretty much going to get divorced. and, you know, I was quite vengeful and all of those things. And I reasoned with myself. I thought, you know, I'm just feeling so guilty about this. I'm not telling my wife of anything that I'm doing. We'd stop going to church because I just felt so guilty about even entering the four walls. I mean, I was the ultimate hypocrite, you know, kind of put on my happy churchy face and then go home and view pornography. And so I declined a long way down into a deep, deep, deep pit. And so I just decided, well, we're going to get divorced anyway. So if I tell her, we're probably going to get divorced. So I'm not really have nothing to lose. You know, I'm going to feel a little bit better because I've fessed up.
So did you confess again? She didn't realise that you were going down this.
So, you know, about, I think it was another 5 years into our marriage or, yeah, something around there, I confessed to her again and said, I'm still looking at the stuff. And, yeah, there was huge heartache.
How was it that she didn't know? If you're going through sessions of up to 6 hours.
Yeah, well, I mean, obviously, like I said, I was a master deceiver and liar, so there's plenty of kind of excuses I had for doing things. There was excuses I had for being locked away in a room, and sometimes I'd get up in the middle of the night, you know, all kinds of crazy stuff, you know, that I'd kind of do to feed this. And, you know, she kind of had her suspicions, but I think, you know, deep down that she had her suspicions, but she kind of hoped that it wasn't true. And she'd kind of never really asked me, and she didn't really know who to talk to about it from her point of view.
And what did that news do to her?
So, yeah, it absolutely shattered her, of course. And I'd pretty much convinced myself that that would be the end of our marriage because, you know, I was, you know, a fair way down that into that cycle. And she decided to stick by me. And it took a while to come to that decision, but that's ultimately what she did.
That's amazing.
Yeah, I'm absolutely a very lucky man because, you know, now I have two beautiful daughters and you know, we've got a great relationship now, and they're all things that I was just tossing away for some pictures.
How was it that she was able to do that?
Well, at the end of the day, she obviously loved me unconditionally to an absolute capacity that I didn't even understand. And she was, you know, the ultimate gracious and graceful wife. And she really wanted to stick by me because she saw in me just how destroyed I was. And she saw in me that I genuinely had reached the point where I wanted to do something about it. We didn't realize how long the journey was going to be to get out of that. But we kind of came up with a strategy to kind of deal with it, and she took the ADSL modem away, and when I wanted to surf the internet, she'd come and plug it in and sit next to me. And I was just finding in those periods when I didn't have my access, I was just going crazy, you know, I was going through like withdrawal symptoms, which, you know, a lot of people don't understand, but there's been a lot of research done now in this area, and, you know, neuroscientists are finding that heroin addicts and porn addicts look very, very similar when they stick them under MRIs. They're seeing very similar levels of the different, you know, chemicals, neurochemicals in the brain being stirred, and this actually can become a physical dependent addiction.
Yeah, so explain a bit more about how that physical dependence plays out.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's different for every person, of course. For me, I had a very, very low self-esteem, and so pornography had kind of become my escape. I was kind of going after this utopia that, you know, I could escape from this incredible low self-esteem, and the more I viewed, the lower my self-esteem got, so the more I viewed. And that cycle kept on going to the point where I'd created like a Grand Canyon in my brain. The only way that my brain knew to actually get to utopia was through pornography. And so I just set up that dependency, and it literally consumed me. It absolutely consumed me to the point where I was just absolutely beside myself.
I'm still getting over the grace and strength of your wife.
Yeah.
That wasn't a naivety?
It probably was. I mean, we had no idea, both of us, you know, how kind of hooked I'd become and how dependent on it I'd become. And, you know, we were so naive, we had no idea how long it was going to take to actually fix and what that process would be.
You've said that a couple of times. So how long?
So, look, for me, it was a very long journey. We didn't know who to talk to. We didn't know who to talk to at church. And we weren't really going to church. So we'd, kind of pulled a lot of those contacts had disappeared. And so we did a lot of that journey on our own. And I started kind of researching why I was behaving this way. And that's when I started seeing that neuroscientists were talking about these things called neural pathways and these shortcuts that the brain creates. And they were saying, these are like when you're learning to drive, you see a rabbit in front of the car and you when you're learning to drive, you go, oh, a rabbit, what do? Oh, that's right, brake pedal, where's a brake pedal? Oh, no, you hit the rabbit.
Yeah.
And over a period of time, the brain shortcuts that to the point where you go, hey, there's a rabbit, bang, your foot's on the brake. And this is kind of what I'd created in my brain. Like I said before, I want to get to Utopia. Only way I know how to get there is with pornography. And so I'd go to the pornography. And so I had to learn to divert from that pathway. And when I understood what was going on in the neuroscience, I started recognizing ways to actually deal with that. So when I was sitting in front of the computer wrestling, instead of viewing, which was very tempting, and I did do a few times in my recovery, I would go cycling. And I did a lot of cycling.
You'd need to do a lot of cycling, I'm sure. So, on Open House, we're with Jason Huxley, the founder of the Guilty Pleasure Charity and somewhere where people can go for help, which we'll cover in a moment. Through this time of recovery and trying to find a way out of this, you didn't seek professional help.
No, well, it was kind of a lone journey. So I didn't know that professional help existed in this area. I didn't know. I kind of thought I was on my own. I thought that, you're just a real dirty man and, you're worthless and all of those things. And that obviously just fueled the fire. And so I really did the journey on my own. I didn't know who to fess up to. I didn't want to speak to mates about it. I didn't want to speak to family. I was extremely ashamed about it. And so we did the journey on our own for quite a number of years. And it had its ups and downs. There was periods where I was extremely, irritable and all of those things. I remember one time not even talking to my wife for 2 weeks, even though we lived in the same house. And for some reason, she stuck by me.
She's amazing. Yeah.
So, I have an exceptional wife.
Yes.
And so we'd worked through that, and it was a long time down the path before I went and did a program called Valiant Man. And I was well into my recovery by then. And it was really through the encouragement of my dad and also kind of as a little bit of research for what I was planning with Guilty Pleasure, which I'll talk about in a minute, that I went to that program. And it wasn't until then that I started realizing that there was other people out there who actually have the same issues.
So what were the things that helped you?
So the things that helped me, early on was just understanding the neuroscience and understanding, hey, I need to divert from that pathway. I mentioned the Grand Canyon before. If it rains near the Colorado River in the Grand Canyon, that water goes into the canyon, forms a deeper rut. So by viewing more pornography, it's kind of like rain. It's going into the canyon and it's forming a deeper rut. And so the only way to fix that is to divert. And how do you do that? You go to the source of the stream. If you go upstream, it's very easy to divert the path of the water before it's gone into that rut. And so once I understood that, that's when, going cycling, going and seeing some friends or anything to kind of get me away from the temptation really helped that. And I started forming new kind of ruts in my brain that would actually get me away from that.
At what stage did you get back to church and how difficult was that process?
So we got back to church about 3 years into my recovery. I'd kind of reached a point with God where I kind of thought he existed again. I'd kind of gotten, because I felt so guilty about what I was doing and I'd pulled away from God so much, I stopped praying and all of those things. I just started saying, hey, God doesn't exist. It was a lot easier to have a God who didn't exist, and then that kind of wasn't so guilty. I didn't feel so guilty about it or shameful about it, and so I'd really pushed him away. And it took me a long time to come back and seek him out and start saying, God is actually gracious. Like a child who falls down, when a child's learning to walk and they keep falling down, we don't say to them, hey, kid, this walking thing ain't for you, you know. That's it. Give up. Don't do the walking anymore. And, you know, God doesn't say that to us. He's like us as parents. He says, hey, come on, get up, keep going. You know, he knows our heart. He knows that even though I was falling occasionally, he knew where I was, you know, he knew that I was trying to fix this thing. And he is so gracious that he understands that and he knows that. And he's already forgiven me well before I've even thought of forgiving myself. And it took me quite a long time to realize that.
Yes, I'm sure. I'm sure your wife taught you a lot about that
as
well.
Yes, absolutely.
In practice, but also in words.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So she was just an amazing support. And, you know, now with our organization, Guilty Pleasure, we're, you know, constantly talking about this issue and, you know, our story's kind of out there. And, you know, that to start with is quite difficult, but we're starting to see now that it's making a bit of a difference in people's lives.
So you can be an addict and then a recovered addict. What makes you so different that you have to set up a charity to go and help others?
Like I said, in my journey, I just felt so lonely and I really didn't know who to talk to and I didn't know why I was behaving that way. Laura didn't understand why I was behaving that way. And so through our journey, we just had this incredible passion to kind of fill that gap between, hey, I'm addicted to stuff and help. And so we just wanted to kind of give people some information that actually got them across the line and hopefully got them across the line well before crisis point, which is, you know, I kind of waited till crisis point. And so our initial idea, I'm a video producer and I thought, hey, I'll just do a documentary on the topic. And that was kind of my grand idea. But it didn't sit right with me and I didn't feel like it had the kapow that we needed to really tackle this. You know, you can kind of go in and drop a bomb and then, you know, it all gets cleaned up and, you know, your life's back to normal. We felt like we needed to do something that was going to be long term. We started visiting churches that were talking about pornography and we started noticing that, you know, a lot of churches didn't know how to talk about the issue. Mm. And a lot of them, some didn't want to talk about it, some the pastors are struggling, some really wanted to talk about it and had no idea, and some just absolutely nailed it. And so we thought, you know, we need to develop a resource to help them as well. And then, you know, because I didn't seek the professional help, I'm like, you know, if I had sought after professional help early, we probably could have saved a lot of heartache, you know, in our journey. And so we really need to start compiling a database of this help as well. And that's kind of where Guilty Pleasure was birthed.
So what's the sort of help that you offer people if they come to you?
So we're a relatively new charity and what we're developing is a range of resources. Our short-term plan is we're doing this amazing documentary using some analogies to explain the different principles rather than just having professionals talk. And so we'll be going on a journey across America, meeting with various experts. We're filming at Grand Canyon and Alcatraz and Times Square and some golf courses and theme parks. And so it's really going to be quite epic. But what we're doing is using these analogies to help, you know, people actually understand the principles. Like I mentioned with the Grand Canyon, we're actually meeting with a neuroscientist at the Grand Canyon and we're going up in a helicopter and talking about the neuroscience, you know, how it's like a Grand Canyon in your brain. And we're going down the Colorado River. It's like, you know, once you're in that river, you're just going to go where the water goes and we're going to hike out as an analogy of, you know, how tough that rut is actually to overcome. And so that's what we're building into the documentary. But we're also developing some sermon series for pastors to use. We want them to preach about this from the platform. They need to talk about it to their congregations. And so while we're filming the documentary, we're also filming content that will slot into those. And then pastors will be able to talk from the platform with well-researched, you know, proper information and a good way to actually do it. And we're also currently compiling a database in Australia, and we hope to move this worldwide, of trusted psychologists and counsellors and programs that people can do to get recovery. So really, we're trying to position as an organisation that raises the awareness around these issues and connects you or people around you to help.
I think by the sound of the figures that we keep on getting week by week, day by day, about the impact and damage of pornography, it's got to be out there and it's got to be owned up to.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, in the church alone, in surveys where people have admitted, you know, 50% of Christians are saying it's a problem in their home. If Christians themselves stop viewing pornography, we would slash almost half of the porn profits. I mean, that's scary. We should be leading in this as the church. You know, we should be leading in it. We shouldn't be kind of sweeping it under the carpet, because it's literally, there's guys like me. I mean, look at what I'm doing now. And I'm only doing this because I dealt with this problem. So imagine if we untap that in, you know, people sitting in congregations at churches. Imagine what we're going to be able to do. It just, it absolutely blows my mind. And that's what we're going after, you know.
Absolutely. Well, all strength to you. The website is what?
Is guiltypleasure.tv. And yeah, keep visiting, and we're slowly putting more and more information on there.
And we'll put the link up on our Open House Community Facebook page. Jason Huxley, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
We hope you enjoyed this Open House podcast. To hear more from Open House, visit openhousecommunity.com.au.